Welcome, everyone, to the next edition of the TMS Wiki's weekly TMS discussion group. This group has the format of a book group and also simultaneously just a general discussion group. Today, we are absolutely thrilled to have on the line Sarno psychologist, Sarno patient, and TMS author, Nicole Sachs, LCSW. And we are going to be beginning our discussion of her book, The Meaning of Truth. The Meaning of Truth talks about her experience recovering from her own TMS, some of her own issues, and it also, I think more importantly, talks about the sort of work that she does as a TMS therapist, as an experienced therapist, working with a wide variety of patients and clients. So it distills her approach down into the most important ideas, the things which you need in order to heal. So I am very excited about going over this book with Nicole, and I am tremendously grateful that she has taken the time to join us today. We have 20 people on the line, roughly speaking. I'm very excited about this, and it says something about response to Nicole's book. Very positive. First, Nicole, I just wanted to thank you for joining us. I think that is wonderful.
You are very welcome. It is my pleasure. As most of you know, I'm very passionate about this work.
I also want to introduce my co-host, Eric Kirby Watson. I will refer to him sometimes as Eric, sometimes as Kirby. I use both names. Most frequently, I'll use Kirby. He is a wonderful guy. He is one of the most prolific posters on the TMS Wiki. And incredibly, incredibly empathic. He has a long history of working with people and is just a blessing. So welcome, Herbie.
Hey. All right, man. It's awesome to be here. I got Nicole's book about a year and a half ago, and I have been so excited to... When I first got it, I never would have knew that I'd be here. You know, being able to go through her powerful
That's
book.
That's my most amazing thing. I love it.
Yeah, it's so powerful. And, man, I'm just ready to get it started, you know. But at the same time, this again, it's so powerful. I never would have thought I'd been here. I'm just so excited to be here, everybody.
So I guess I have a couple questions here. I thought I would start off with some questions. But this is very free form. I mean, it's basically a discussion group. We don't generally have near this many people. Usually it's smaller, but obviously we have some star power here tonight.
Stop it.
Well, we do. 20 is pretty amazing on a Tuesday night, 9 o'clock. But the thing which I wanted to say is, you know, everybody who writes a TMS book has a mission. It's something that they're trying to share. And I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about what you are hoping for people to get out of the book.
Awesome. All right. That is such
a
great...
Well, actually, you know what? I'm going to interrupt myself and ask for a slightly different question. My bet is that people want to know a little bit more about you first. Why don't you tell us a little bit about you? Just why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
All right.
Yeah, I know a little bit of you from Facebook friends.
Right.
But, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Okay, well, most of you guys know, because if anyone has read the book, that I am a TMS survivor story. I'll start kind of in the present, and then I can jump back, and we can mix it all up. But I'm a mother of five. I have 3 biological children and 2 stepchildren, and I'm 42 years old. And I am a clinician, psychotherapist in private practice in Lewis, Delaware. And kind of what ended up happening is when I first went back to school, I immediately, you know, within, I guess I was married very soon thereafter, and I had kids. And so I didn't get my certification to be a therapist right away. So when I had my 10-month-old, who was at the time my youngest, and I kind of came up for air, I said to myself, I really want to dedicate my career to TMS and to helping people heal because of my personal story. So essentially, that's kind of where my professional background started. I don't even know if I would have gone back to private practice had it not been for my pain. and my meeting Dr. Sarno, who was over the years a tremendous father figure, because my father passed away when I was 27. He was so kind. He was really so appreciative of all of us that would come into NYU once a month and do these alumni panels. And I'm sure you guys have heard of those, right?
Yes.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about those? So I know I've heard of them, but I don't know if all the listeners have. So why don't you just give us a little preface about what they were, yeah.
Absolutely, and they were really powerful. So essentially, what we would do is Dr. Sarno would choose four of his patients a month, and I sat in on, I spoke probably at 80% of them, but the ones I didn't even speak at, I would come and listen because they were so powerful. And it would be, you know, anywhere from 50 to 200 people, depending on the month. They were all currently under his care. And we would sit, the four of us, up on the stage in the lecture hall, and we would tell our stories. And each of us got around 10 minutes, but it was very loose. We could do longer or shorter. And then afterward, it was an hour and a half Q&A where the audience would be able to ask any question they wanted and get a real personal response from someone who's been there, which was so amazing. And it just became, as I'm sure it has with the book group that you guys do, it became a very, like a family. You know, the ones of us that were recovered and were speaking, we felt so amazing and so helpful. And then the people would come up and there would be lines of people to, you know, to chat with us after. And what was the most beautiful thing is over the 5 years that I did this, let's say the first or second year, there were those people who couldn't sit, couldn't stand. They were in motorized wheelchairs. I mean, there were so many different people from different walks of life. And by my third or fourth year, some of those people were up on stage with me. And that was amazing.
Yeah. So the people who started, there were 50 to 200 people in the audience at the start? That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, it was like one of those NYU lecture halls. And Dr. Sarno would always be on the stage with us. And whenever someone asked a question that he felt was, you know, more of a medical question and not for the panel members, he would just jump up, all, you know, 5'3" of him. And he would say, you know, that's not for the panel, that's for me. And he was so wise, and everything that came out of his mouth was so perfect for, you know, the moment. And so much healing took place in those groups. And so essentially, once I got my degree, my private practice license, Dr. Sarno would be referring clients into my practice, some of whom I still see remotely, because, of course, I've relocated to Delaware. But we do FaceTime, we do Skype, we do phone sessions, and it all works out really nicely. And I just had so many clients say, you got to write a book. You got to write a book. You have to do it. People need to understand. And so I wrote a book.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Herbie, do you want to jump in? You do such a good job of moderating. Is there anything you want to add here?
Right now, I just want to hear that next question you asked her first.
All right.
What was it, the first one you asked her?
What are you hoping to get, or what do you hope people will get from the book? You have a very clear sense of what you're looking for in terms of what people will get from the book. Am I right about that, Nicole?
Sure. And Herbie, did you have something you wanted to add to the question?
Well, I've got something after you ask, after you answer this question. I do got something I'd like to hear from you from the chapter.
Okay, cool. All right, so I'll start by answering the question. Is that good?
Great.
Okay. So what essentially I found over my years of being a patient and being a practitioner is that people could get it. Like, they could say, all right, I'm laying down my weapon. This, my pain is TMS, or, you know, I guess you guys, PPD or MBS, you know, we have all these acronyms. But they would say it, but then they would just feel like, I don't really totally get how to take that belief that for after years of struggling and medications and surgeries and whatnot and hiding and agoraphobia and all the things that are, you know, connected with pain, anxiety, depression, they just needed a clear path out. And One of the things that happened while I was, you know, younger in my practice is that I found myself not wanting to do what had been done to me by other therapists, which is I always felt really small, and I always felt really like less than, and that I was damaged, and the therapist was this godlike creature that was going to help me. And it really made me, you know, in reflection, it made me full of shame because I just wanted to be heard. And I don't know why, but the traditional psychotherapeutic paradigm doesn't really speak to that as much. It's more about, you know, the patient and the doctor. And so I started leveling the playing field, and one of the ways I did that, which totally came from my beautiful experiences on the Sarno panel, is I started sharing my own humanity. And that's a lot of what my book is about, which is we need to be able to share our humanity and to support one another and to not be full of shame and full of hatred because we don't know where to put it. And I would share my story, and I want to say as a caveat, I would never share unnecessary personal information. I would never do anything unless it was in the particular needs of my patient. But by hearing me say, I mean, I had one client who was suffering from a myriad of TMS. I mean, the most bizarre things. And I'm willing to talk about anything, so we can talk about this at any point more. But she looked at me with tears in her eyes one day, and she said, "I'm just so grateful that you told me you have kids." And I said, "Well, why? You know, why is that such a big deal?" And she said, "Because no one's ever shared anything, and I didn't even know when I sat and talked about my children if this person even related to me." She said, "So it meant so much." And I found that so powerful that tiny little bit of kindness, of self-disclosure, it exponentially helped her therapy. And I will say this particular person I'm thinking of was essentially debilitated completely from her TMS symptoms, and now she is 100% well and is thriving. She opened her own business and is thriving. Really amazing. So I want people to understand how to excavate their own truth in a safe way, and I want to show myself as a support for people so they can see it's possible because I had such a difficult journey. And I want to actually just like step by step help them understand what to do. So if their passion is there and they really want to help heal themselves, they can do so. Does that kind of answer it?
Yeah, it sure does. It feels like a very applicable book in that you're trying to give people tools that they can use. Am I right about that?
Absolutely. I mean, the purpose of the book, first and foremost, is to make them feel not alone. Anyone reading, I want everyone who ever hears my voice to know you are not alone. Other people feel this way. Other people have this pain. Other people have been to a million doctors, and no one can really tell them what exactly it is. And putting out words like fibromyalgia and, spondylolisthesis, which is my diagnosis, they're really scary. And I think fear is the thing that drives the TMS beast more than anything. It definitely is anger, but anger is just, I mean, fear just fans the flames.
Yes, that is one of the things we notice on the forum also. I'm so fascinated that you see that same thing. Yeah, fear. Fear is huge.
Well, because if you think about it, let's say me, right? I'm a young mother. All I've ever wanted to do is have a family. And here I am with a 1.5-year-old and a 3.5-year-old, and I'm basically debilitated. So it's not just about my pain that day. It's about my panic. Like, am I going to have the life that I wanted? Is it over for me at the age of, 28? It's just a crazy concept, and that fear kept me in a great deal of pain.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit of that? So you talked a little bit about your story, but tell us about where you were at that point in your life when you were that mother and you were feeling that pain. And would you mind telling us a little bit about that story?
No, it would be my pleasure. Essentially, as many of you, or maybe all of you know, because Forrest and I did that interview, what it must have been like a couple of years ago, a year and a half, that my...
If I can interrupt, for people who are listening, anybody who wants a longer version of this story with video on it, no less, if you search YouTube for Nicole Sachs, or if you go to search.tmswiki.org, you'll get our own custom Google search engine, and if you just do Nicole Sachs interview, you'll see this. Like, we talked like 50 minutes, correct?
Yeah, yeah, it's long. I think it's like between 45 and 50 minutes.
There are so many resources out there. Let's not assume that people have watched it, though. And also, I feel as a host, I've been a little bit negligent. One of the things, I asked Nicole, I said, Nicole, we are so happy that you're going to be coming here. How do you want this to run? Because you know what your style is like. And she said, I want it to be interactive. I want to hear people's stories. The very first one, we're just kind of getting to know each other. My bet is that most people aren't going to want to pipe up. But if you do want to pipe up, if anybody wants to jump in and ask Nicole a question, in fact, I'll solicit questions in about a second. If you do, please jump in. Nicole wants to share. I hope it's okay if I mention that you were talking about earlier in the alumni panels and how powerful they were. And when the two of us were talking, she said it was the questions. That we had 20 minutes to tell our stories, and then there was an hour and a half for the Q&A, and that was the powerful stuff. So I think, am I right that that's what you want to replicate?
Absolutely. Everything you just said, I'm in full agreement with anything that people need. And I know this is our first meeting, so people will be quiet. But if any of you guys want to tell a story, want to ask a question, this is such a wonderful time for me to be able to share because I'm so busy and I do get a lot of emails and inquiries, but I always answer them, hopefully, briefly. So I say, you know, I'm too busy right now, but I'm sorry. This is a way that I can really reach a lot of people in one shot. And so I would just encourage people to have that in their back of their mind, you know?
Yeah. So let me as the host, just say, is anything right now, and what we're doing, maybe we run our discussion group, is everybody has a live mic, so people can listen, but make sure that there is no background. Do not run your TV. Do not run your dishwasher. Don't stand next to the air conditioner, because everybody can speak. But at the moment, is there anyone who would like to ask a question of Nicole about anything that we've come up with so far? Because really, it's the questions that make it interesting.
I have a question.
Jump in. What is it? Thank you, Colin.
Hey, Herbie, how you doing? It's Joe.
Good, Joe. How you doing, buddy?
Good. Forrest, how you doing?
Doing grand.
My question is, you know, I learned about TMS about 5 months ago, and I'm 37. I had a diagnosis of fibromyalgia, CFS, all that stuff, and long story short, I've been going to a TMS therapist once a week for about 4.5 months, and I see a bump up improvement in my symptoms, a little one, every time I go. And yet, in between sessions, journaling, reading these books on TMS, doing research on the internet, trying to practice these things, I don't see those improvements. And so I'm wondering if that's a common thing that you see in your practice. I just joined recently. This is Nicole Sachs is a therapist?
Yes. Yeah, I'm a psychotherapist, and I'm the author of the book.
Right. If you've come across that, and if you have any advice in terms of, I've seen my joint soreness improve. I've seen my fatigue improve. My depression has lifted somewhat. I'd say I'm maybe, it's hard to put a number on it, but I'm not dramatically better, but I'm going in that direction.
Right.
And I want to do more on my own. And yet all these things I'm trying to put into practice, I don't know if there's too much junk in my unconscious still that we gotta clean out or what's going on, but just thought I'd throw that out there.
All right. That's a great question. Forrest, is it okay if I just go ahead and answer?
Well, yeah. So do you want to answer that now? I was thinking more of like questions specifically related to the book and stuff like that. Do you want to take that now or do you want to take that later? Because it's an awesome question for later. But do you want to maintain the flow now?
I'll just briefly address it because it actually does have to do with the book. So did you say your name was Joe?
Joe, yeah. Joe Joseph, yeah.
Okay. Joe Joseph. here's what I have to say, and that's a very, very common complaint and fear of TMS patients, which is, I kind of get it, I kind of think this is me, I see a little improvement, but then, like, what else? What else can I do? And so, first of all, if you don't mind me asking, have you read my book?
I have not, no. I actually knew at the 6 p.m. meeting time there's the webinar, and then I just came on right now and saw that you're the host.
Oh, cool.
So I'm going to check it out, definitely.
So what I would say is, really, and I tell all my clients this, and as soon as they read it, they're going, oh, thank God. It's such shorthand to hearing my answer, because you'll get so much more. But essentially, I suggest you read it, and when you do, you're going to understand what you need to do. Because what I, and that was another thing that kind of goes back to the question that Herbie and Forrest started out with, which was, you know, like, what are the main themes? What's the most important message to get across? And really what it is that people are trying so hard to be out of pain, but sometimes you don't know exactly what to do and the kind of journaling to do and the kind of bravery and the kind of self-excavation, and I do my very best in the book to explain that. So
okay, that's
I really
great.
Think that you'd benefit. Yeah.
Okay.
That's true. And it makes sense, because there's a chance to really lay it all out and do it systematically and, you know, anticipate all the questions. Yeah. And make it entertaining, too.
Right.
Okay, so how about anyone else? Your question, Joe? Anyone else want to jump in? Live mic.
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
It's Jersey Joan.
Hey, Joan.
How are you?
Hey, John.
Hi, Nicole. I read your book. I'm just about finishing the end of it. I love the way it was, just the way it was printed. But I wanted to ask you this question of the severity of the pain.
Okay.
Does the severity of the pain mean that the emotions are more, I don't know the word I'm trying to find.
Like varied?
Yeah.
So your question is, go ahead.
Yeah. I was also a sauna patient too, and I was at those panels when you were there.
Oh, cool. Hi.
Yeah. So I did have back pain at that time, and my back is fine. I have facial pain right now.
It's a symptom imperator. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I just am suffering with this. And the question is the severity mean that the emotions are deeper?
Well, to be honest with you, and I'm going to pull Dr. Sarno out of my pocket for this one, what he would say and what I believe is the severity of the pain indicates the emotions are closer, not deeper. They are threatening to come up into the consciousness, which, of course, as soon as they do, you'll be out of pain. And your body and your brain is fighting so hard against them coming up because, as we all know, if we know anything about TMS, our brain thinks it's protecting us, even though that's complete crap. And so when the brain feels like these things, and I remember Sarno saying it many times, as they rise, that line between the subconscious and the conscious, our brain is going to fight, you know, it's going to dance as fast as it can. It's the last chance it has to say, oh, no, I don't need to feel those feelings. I need to go to the doctor about my facial pain. And then as soon as you do that, the brain relaxes because it's like, oh, good. I don't have to feel those feelings. Whereas obviously walking toward those feelings, sitting within that dark room and turning on the light is the way we heal. And we need to reteach our brains. Like Dr. Schubner, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, the way he explains in his book, Unlearn Your Pain, which I also have a great deal of respect for. So I would say, Joan, that you should be brave, and you should continue to really work toward those feelings, because that's what I believe is happening.
Okay. Thank you.
Good answer.
You're welcome.
So as my host radar is going on, my sense is that we have some awesome questions, and I'm really thrilled about the questions. And thank you, Joan and Bo, for volunteering your questions. But if I know the audience, probably most people are wanting things to be more focused right now. So does anyone have any focus questions specifically about the book? Less general TMS questions. There will be so much time for general TMS questions in the future, but any questions about what Nicole has spoken about so far? All right. Okay, so...
Okay, because anything that evolves, we can deal with. And like I said to Forrest and I said to you guys, I'm happy as long as, you know, I don't have a sick kid or I don't have an emergency. I'm happy to be here every week. So I don't want people to worry that their questions won't get answered. And we can. And Herbie also mentioned he had a follow-up question, so maybe he wanted to ask that.
Yeah, this is on the intro to your book. And basically, I just took it out of a section there. It says, when I ask you to tell me your most darkest, most raw, primitive truths, realize that you are, most importantly, speaking to yourself. No one else needs to hear. And you said, but you do. And you got the U in all capital letters. And
right.
If you could expound on that to, you know, open up what you're saying there. I know what you're saying. And if you could just kind of speak out what you meant by that about, you know, them needing to know these truths. Because a lot of us, you know, we look in the mirror and we go about our day, but we don't face those deep, dark shadows with those things that we buried years ago. How would you talk about that section? What's your words on that?
Okay, great. That's a great question. So that's essentially getting at the heart of what all of this work, healing work is. That's the heart of it. So essentially, and I'm going to repeat it just so I can be clear on the question. So what Herbie is saying is, how is it, like, what is the significance behind you need to hear it? And we all think we know ourselves. I mean, of course, we're us, right? We're the only ones that we're with all the time. But, like Herbie said, our defense mechanisms cause us to hide from these darker truths. So we get up and we become moms and dads and partners and workers and, you know, whatever we are, parents and children to, you know, some of us are caregiving now to older parents. And we just get through the day and we don't focus on what might be really, you know, seething within us, whether it's anger or fear or resentment or embarrassment or shame or a secret because someone abused you once and you never told. You know, things like that fester within us. Because we pretend we don't have time, and that's just one of those defense mechanisms that it thinks it's helping us, but as adults, it really no longer is. And I say this to a lot of my clients, especially those who had, those who had childhood abuse, which is that, you know, I say to them, when you were little, those defense mechanisms were so necessary that we can never put them down. You needed to disassociate. You needed to intellectualize. You needed to, you know, project and make the other person wrong when you were little, because we don't know what the heck to do with our difficult experiences and our painful thoughts. But now that we're grown up, what happens is we do the same thing, but it has to come out somewhere, and that's the TMS beast. And so, to answer your question, Herbie, I think that what I was trying to get across there is you, and I'm speaking to every one of you that is listening, you are important, and not just your kids, and not just your spouse, and not just your work, and not the society around you that you feel like you need to be a goodist all the time. You're important, and if you don't take the time to learn, truly learn, it takes so much bravery about your own issues, things that you think you already know, but you actually really need to get the emotions out, then you have a good likelihood that you're going to live your life in pain. And that is just so sad and so unnecessary. And so I'm kind of encouraging people to realize that everyone thinks they know who they are, everyone, and you do. But there are two levels on which we live. The first is the surface level. Like, we walk the streets, we meet the bus, we go to our job, you know, whatever. But then there's the deeper level of things that are operating all the time. And one of the things I like to say is, if a tree falls in the forest, it makes a noise, whether you're there to hear it or not. And those trees, you know, those unspoken stories of abuse, the day-to-day anger that you feel toward your, you know, your coworker who always degrades you, your anger over your children's disrespect, whatever, it falls every day. And because we don't want to listen to it, the pain has to go somewhere. And that's where, you know, people always say to me, I can't believe I threw out my back. I was just lifting my arm to get a plate out of the pantry. And I say, right, because it wasn't about the lifting. It was about, that was the day that your reservoir of rage just hit its critical mass. And if you aren't going to deal with those feelings, your body's going to give you something to deal with.
Wow. That is awesome. I get everything you're saying, Nicole. And like so many people that will look in the mirror and will go out during the day, and we put on this mask of who we are. But then when we get home at night and we sit down, and we might have had the happy face on all day just to please others, to get others to, you know, like us and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But at night when we get home and we sit there and say, you know, the depression's been there the whole time, and we've had this fake happy face on all day. And the real you has got to face this depression every night when you get home. And the thing is, we go our whole lives trying to run from it. We go our whole lives trying to fake like it's not there. And then we're scared to face it and face those emotions. And of course, that's later on in your book as you get to that. But it is, some of it's in your first chapter too, about, you know, just feeling your feelings and you know, knowing the true you and accepting the true you and being happy with the true you, you know.
Right. Absolutely.
So do you want to expound some? I think you just did. You pretty much expounded pretty good on being the true you, right? On those that have to wear masks, you know, to cover up for who they really are.
Right, and I think that what's great about this first meeting is that if you haven't read the book and you're listening, probably some of this seems very interesting, but you don't quite get it. What's exciting for me is that when we go through the book week by week and, you know, discuss specific chapters, we're going to be able to delve much more deeply into that little discussion we just had, you and I, and people are going to really get it because they will have just read it. And so it's exciting to really help people step by step get what it really means to accept the real you, because I think it sounds like beautiful on paper, right? But like it's much more complicated than it sounds.
Yes. That, and I understand. I totally understand. We need to carry this out over the whole talk of the book, so that
right.
It can seep into everybody's mind and they can totally get it. I do have another question, but if anybody else has got a question for Nicole, I'm sure she's all ears, guys. So I've unmuted everybody other than Audrey, and Audrey will have to get to you in a little, hun, because you got some loud, anyway, some technical difficulties going on. But anyway, anybody want to say anything to Nicole about what we've talked about so far? Okay.
Hello. No, it's okay. I don't.
Yeah. Okay. Tom here, Tennis Tom.
All right.
Can you hear me?
Hey, Tennis Tom. How you doing, buddy?
Great. Thank you. Thanks for sharing with us and being here tonight. And I am up to page 162 as of today. And life is not good or bad, happy or sad. Often life is about choosing. So. That's a good one, I guess, versus ambivalence. I just finished watching Field of Dreams, your homework assignment last night.
Right.
And I think I got it. It's about belief. If you believe, you'll see it. And,
correct.
Yeah, thank you for that.
That
Yeah, good movie. And a question for you, yeah. How come your fellow psychotherapist, I live in a hotbed of psychotherapy called Southern Marin, just north of San Francisco, and every psychotherapist I see in the hot tub, I'll eventually ask them, have you ever heard of Sarno? Or and it seems like, I'll say, I'll be reading the book in there, and they'll ask me, what are you reading? I say, I'm reading about psychosomatic medicine. And, and then they might ask who wrote it, and I say, Dr. Sarno, or Steve Ozanich, or Nicole Sachs. And then they're not interested whatsoever. I haven't met one yet who is at all interested in TMS or has heard of it. What do you think about your fellow psychotherapist, and how come they don't seem to be knowledgeable about TMS?
Well, one of the things that I'm very grateful to Forrest about is he's created this practitioner group that I'm part of, so I get to read, we all read each other's threads every day from, the top therapists, the top doctors in the field. And I think that, to answer your question, Tom, it's coming. I mean, to me, it is rolling really fast right now. When I was younger and I was going through the depths of my pain, the worst of it, I think nobody knew about this stuff. And, some people did, but, in my longer interview with Forrest, you could see how I became acquainted with it, because Rosie O'Donnell, actually, when she had her old talk show, one of her producers was in a motorized wheelchair, and she had been to all these doctors, and literally Rosie just came on air and said, if anybody knows anything to help this woman, no one can figure out what's wrong with her. And apparently many, many people wrote in and said, Dr. John Sarno. And, I'm sure most of you are familiar with the story. Her name is Jeanette Barber. She went from being in a motorized wheelchair, and I believe the following year she ran the New York Marathon. And it's an incredibly empowering story. So I think, Tom, it's just waiting for the world to catch up, because a lot of people, and if you really think about it logically, would stand to do a lot of harm in their pocketbook if this were embraced. And, I think one day they're not going to have a choice, but think about it. Everything from Dr. Scholl's inserts for your shoes, because if you have to stand, your back's going to hurt, to every, opiate medication, to injections in your spine, to an enormous amount of orthopedic surgery. I mean, think of the zillions of dollars that the pharmaceuticals, it's just a hard one for people to take, also because they're so scared and they don't realize how they can make themselves well. But that's part of my crusade, if you will, that I won't be sitting quietly about this as long as I have a voice, because the more people who understand it and the more people who are cured and the more people like Forrest who are spending so much of their time, being so on top of this with the nonprofit, it's not going to be long before people start to really embrace it, and I do believe that.
Hey, thank you.
Awesome.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Tom.
One exciting development, people who come to the TMS Wiki will know the tmswiki.org/forum, or just Google TMS forum. That'll be the top result that pops up. Now we have Caroline. So on the practitioner list, we were discussing the new Sarno documentary. Caroline from the production company that's doing that documentary is now on our forum, and she's chatting up a storm and meeting, and she's going to be laying it all out about what their plans are and how they're going to move forward with all this amazing footage that they have. So maybe that'll help bring that day that Nicole was talking about where more people do know about it.
Yep, I agree with you.
Yeah, it has to. The media opinion makers have to get a hold of it, and maybe this movie will help. If PBS picks up the movie and it's shown on PBS and New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and Oprah, the way it'll spread is through the media spreading it, which is the way everything gets spread.
Right, and on that note, one of the things that I always you know, put out there is, if anybody is touched by my work, if anybody is healed by my work, please be vocal about it. Write about it on Amazon. You know, tell your friends that have influence, because I'm so unafraid. I would stand on the stage in front of thousands of people. I would go on any TV show. I would do anything. I don't ever want to, like, have a TV show or do anything like that, because that doesn't fit into my family. You know, I have a lot of priorities in my family. But I would be a guest on anything, because I think that what happens is when people speak with enthusiasm about this and can really show, I mean, I could get 10 people right now who would come on the Today Show with me and tell their stories how they went from on disability to being marathon runners. Like, and that kind of stuff inspires people. And then they really, that's, to me, human interest spreads the word, in my opinion.
Yeah, so powerful.
Mm-hmm. Nicole, I had a question for you. This is North Star.
Hello.
Hi there. Hey, could you elaborate on what you were mentioning about the symptom and when emotions are just beneath the surface? Could you just elaborate on that a little more?
North Star, let me repeat your question so I understand it correctly and you can make sure I'm answering the right question. So what you're wondering is, could I elaborate more on why pain ramps up when emotions get closer to the surface? Was that what you're asking?
Yeah, you had said something that kind of gave it a different frame that kind of made me go, oh, that's interesting, because I know, you know, when you are threatening, when that ego is ready to have the big breakthrough, or not the ego, but, you know, your true self, but you had put a different slant on it that I thought was interesting.
Okay, all right. So, I mean, I'll just tell you how I feel about it.
I'm feeling my way around with this.
I think I may be able to elaborate. It was when you pulled Sarno out of your pocket and you said, it's not the power of the emotion, it's how close to the surface they are.
Yes, that's what it was. Thank you, Forrest.
Okay.
What do you mean by close to the surface?
Okay, so one of the things that Dr. Sarno did, sadly, he's obviously retired, but would do for us, the patients that saw him, is he would draw a diagram. And the diagram always had a line through the center. And next week, hopefully, I'll be on video and I'll draw it and I'll hold it up for everybody. And basically, what he said was that we have all these different subconscious feelings, and they're coming generally from three large groups: painful, repressed things that happened in childhood, day-to-day life, that is just, you know, our lives, the stressful lives we live. And the third thing was our very personality. You know, are we perfectionists, goodists? Can we stand it if someone's mad at us? Do we avoid confrontation at all costs? And a lot of people that suffer from TMS have a lot of these shared qualities. And what he says is those three categories, and those are just, you know, overreaching umbrella categories, but what he basically says is these things, they pile up, okay? So on underneath the line, if you are to imagine it, picture like a beaker. And every time one of those things is triggered in us, it's like adding another cup of boiling acid into a beaker. So when it rises and rises and rises, and now it's just at critical mass, it's just level with the sides of the glass of this cup we're looking at, our mind, our primitive mind that is so powerful beyond any of our understanding. And I always use the cliche, we only use 6% of our brain, whatever that cliche is, it's true, because I've witnessed it myself more times than I can even count, where I am in excruciating pain, and I sit down, I say, Nicole, get a hold of yourself, you know, take a moment, and this doesn't always work, but if I can figure out what it's about, I could be pain-free in 5 minutes, and that is not possible if something were actually structurally wrong with me. And so I guess what I'm saying is, as those very painful emotions bubble toward the top, our primitive brain that we need to rewire starts thinking it needs to save us. It panics. Picture like a mouse in a corner, you know, the whole cornered rat, like back and forth, back and forth, eyes popping out of head, you know, I don't know what to do. And so it literally generates a pain that we'll believe. You know, so if you suffer from migraines, boom, you're going to get a horrible one. If you had a skiing accident 3 years ago and your knee's never been the same, boom, there's your knee. And the thing is that once we start focusing on what we need to do, i.e., I need to get to a doctor, I need an MRI, oh my God, what's wrong with me? Am I ever going to pick up my child again? Am I ever going to be able to run a 5K that I enjoy? Ever at all, and the panic, like what we spoke about at the beginning of the call, the fear, it starts to rise and rise and rise. And all of that mixed together, all of a sudden, all those horrible emotions that you were about to think about are on the back burner because you're too busy going to the doctor. We're stressing about how you're going to get your MRI done or how you're going to pay for it, you know, whatever it is. And that seems to the brain like it's protecting us, but it's quite the opposite. And that's why people, you know, the best thing they can understand from reading my book and from listening to this is go toward the pain in a safe way, whether it's, you know, with a trusted person that you love or with your journal or with your therapist or just laying in bed and hugging your pillow. But don't run from it because that's what starts the worst of the pain. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And so, but getting back, oh, it sounds like the more intense pain in your experience is associated with unconscious emotions that are about to break through. They're closer to the surface. Is that right?
Correct. And I don't think that's a like definite all the time correlation. But I just wanted Joan, when I was answering her question, to understand that I think that it's more toward that direction than the other. I know this to be true. I mean, there's not a doubt in my mind because Dr. Sarno and I have discussed it ad nauseum that, you know, when things, and it doesn't have to be one repressed memory that you've never thought about. It's kind of like, let me give you an example. It's like, I'll give it from one of my client base. So if somebody, let's say, is unhappy about their weight, and so they, quote unquote, try, and, you know, they feel like they're failing all the time. And so when they walk into a clothing store, maybe 5 years before, they used to be like, I'm okay, I'm fine, I love myself the way I am. But let's say they didn't really love themselves the way they were. And they start to realize it more and more. And they start to not be able to hide behind that quite so much. I've had clients tell me they literally walk into a clothing store and they become disabled. Like they have such an incident, like a back spasm, that they need to sit down and they need to leave. Well, it's not because something happened badly to their back. It's because they can no longer hide behind something that they're trying to convince themselves. And so the very thought of trying on clothes and not being able to fit or whatever was enough to trigger the event. So it's closer.
Gotcha. Interesting. Thanks, North Star.
I'm sorry?
What was that?
Oh, thanks, North Star.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, there's a lot of... My silence is you gave a lot of food for thought there, Nicole.
Oh, good. I'm so glad.
So I think I have a poor connection due to some of the technical difficulties that we talked about at the beginning. Herbie, why don't you take over? But we're probably at about time to wrap up the show.
Yeah.
And then maybe we can turn the recording off and maybe just have a little bit more of an informal chat. I will say my cell phone seems to be working for the moment. That the idea, I think, would be nice, since in Nicole's book she talks about the importance of sharing our truth, and since in our experience over time, the discussion group tends to develop a group of regulars. Perhaps one thing that we can do is we can every week turn off the recording at a certain part, and then just have kind of an open chat. So I guess we'll turn off the recording.
Okay. Forrest, I got one question before we turn it off that I think in this recording on a good note, which is all a good note. I'm just saying it ended awesome. Okay. Just plumb awesome, dude. Is that cool?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I'll see you guys next week.
Hold on. I got one question for you.
Okay,
great. Okay, in it's probably about a few pages into your first chapter, you're talking about, you're speaking to a couple, and the couple they're mad at each other and stuff, and then you go into how you tell the how you tell them to come by themselves one at a time, okay?
Yes.
And then after that, you meet with the lady. You meet with the lady first, and the lady comes in, and she's telling you all this bad stuff that's happened, and she's going into how everything's not going to be the same, and you can tell that she's not feeling that great, and she feels like she's not ever going to have that good feeling that she had back 15 years prior to when she got married. And then you stopped her, and you explained to her how she still can always have that feeling, and how he cannot take that feeling away from her. Can you expound on that, and we'll end it with that?
Absolutely, yeah. I still see that client, and she's very, very proud of herself and the work we've done over the past few years, because she's amazing. I mean, she's just an amazing story of healing. And one thing I will say is that is something that so many people forget, which is, let's say, I'll use the example right from the book. Two people get married, and on the day they get married, they are full of joy, and they are full of life and happiness and expectations and the future, the possibilities. If somehow that doesn't go well, like for my client, and, 10, 15 years later, here they are on my couch, and she's saying, oh, my goodness, that was the best. She's crying, and she said, but it was the best day of my life. What she needed to understand is life is not a means to an end. That is still a day. That is still a beautiful day, and it was still a wonderful experience and memory for her, and she is a wonderful, joyful person. And just because something doesn't always work out the way you wanted it to does not take that past away from you. And I think what people get held up on in this TMS work is that they think if they excavate things and they admit how upset they are, that they will no longer be able to be that beautiful girl, up on the bima or the, altar. But that's not true. It's still you. You still get to have all that joy. You just have to reclaim and honor yourself today in addition. So that's kind of what she really needed to hear, is that if she wanted to confront her couple's, the couple relationship problems, that she wasn't going to lose 15 years of herself. And she didn't even know that she was asking the question until I brought it up, and she just, her whole face changed. She was like, oh my goodness, I get to keep me. I get to keep all that joy. And I said, yes, of course. And I mean, that changed her whole course of therapy.
That is so awesome. That is a whole book in itself. it really is. It just spoke volumes to me when I read it. You revealed to her something that was right under her nose, something that was unconscious to her. She was sitting there talking about how everything was going to be terrible, and then you just let her know that she can always, that person, still on the inside of her, that memory is always there,
Mm-hmm. And just because it can still be beautiful.
Yeah, yes.
It can still be positive, beautiful.
Yes, yes. And it's just how she's looking at it. It's just her perspective of it. And you turned it around and showed her how beautiful it still was.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, that's part of healing. Okay, well, that's it. Anybody got any questions about that? I mean, I think that sums it up. That was beautiful, Nicole.
Oh, thank beautiful. You.
Well, God bless you. And we'll be looking forward to next week, chapter 2.
Absolutely.
This is going to be awesome. I can already tell. God bless you and have a good night.
You too. Good night.